Star Wars, Dark Force Rising, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 3, side 2. Reaching out with the Force to call his robe to him, Kabauth got out of bed, feeling a brief rush of vertigo as he stood erect. Yes, it had been difficult, that business of taking command of the Bellicose's turbolaser crews, for the few seconds it had required to annihilate that rebel ship. It had gone beyond any previous stretch of concentration and control, and the mental aches he was feeling now were the payment for that stretch. He tightened the robe sash around him, thinking back. Yes, it had been hard. And yet, at the same time, it had also been strangely exhilarating. On Wayland, he had personally commanded a whole city-state, one with a larger population than that which nestled beneath the high castle. But there, he'd long since gone beyond the need to impose his will by force. The humans and Sadans had submitted to his authority early on. Even the Minonirshi, with their lingering resentment of his rule, had learned to obey his orders without question. The Imperials, as well as the people of Jomark, were going to have to learn that same lesson. Back when Grand Admiral Thrawn had first goaded Kabauth into this alliance, he'd implied that Kabauth had been too long without a real challenge. Perhaps the Grand Admiral had also secretly thought that this challenge of running the Empire's war would prove too much for a single Jedi Master to handle. Kabauth smiled tightly in the darkness. If that was what the glowing-eyed Grand Admiral thought, he was going to be in for a surprise. Because when Luke Skywalker finally got here, Kabauth would face perhaps the most subtle challenge of his life. To bend and twist another Jedi to his will, without the other even being aware of what was happening to him. And when he'd succeeded, there would be two of them. And who could tell what might be possible then? The messenger had dismounted from his thumper and was standing beside the gate now, his sense that of a man prepared to await the convenience of his master, no matter how long that wait might be. That was good. Exactly the proper attitude. Giving his robe sash one final tug, Kabauth headed through the maze of darkened rooms toward the door to hear what his new subjects wished to tell him. Chapter 7. With a delicacy that always seemed so incongruous in a being his size, Chewbacca maneuvered the Falcon into his precisely selected orbital slot above the lush green moon of Endor. Rumbling under his breath, he switched over the power linkages and cut the engines back to standby. Seated in the co-pilot seat, Leia took a deep breath, wincing as one of the twins kicked her from inside. "Doesn't look like Kabarak's here yet," she commented, realizing, even as she said it, how superfluous the comment was. She'd been watching the sensors from the moment they dropped out of light speed. And given there were no other ships anywhere in the system, there wasn't much chance that they could have missed him. But with the familiar engine roar now cut back down to a whisper, the silence felt strange, and even a little eerie to her. Chewbacca growled a question. "We wait, I guess," Leia shrugged. "Actually, we're almost a day early. We got here faster than I'd expected." Chewbacca turned back to his board, growling his own interpretation of the Nogri's absence. "Oh, come on," Leia chided him. "If he'd decided to make this meeting into a trap, don't you think they'd have had a couple of Star Destroyers and an Interdictor Cruiser waiting to meet us?" "Your Highness," Dritio's voice called from down the tunnel, "I'm sorry to disturb you, but I believe I've located the fault in the Carbonti countermeasures package. Could you ask Chewbacca to step back for a moment?" Leia raised her eyebrows in mild surprise as she looked at Chewbacca. As was depressingly normal with the Falcon, several bits of equipment had gone out early in the flight from Coruscant. Up to his elbows with more important repairs, Chewbacca had assigned the relatively low-priority work on the Cabanti to 3PO. Leia had had no objections, though given the results the last time 3PO had tried to work on the Falcon, she hadn't expected very much to come of it. "We'll make a repair droid out of him yet," she said to Chewbacca. "Your influence, no doubt." The Wookiee snorted his opinion of that as he got out of the pilot seat and headed back to see what 3PO had found. The cockpit door slid open, closed again behind him, leaving the cockpit that much quieter.
"You see that planet down there, my dears?" Leia murmured, rubbing her belly gently. "That's Endor, where the Rebel Alliance finally triumphed over the Empire and the New Republic began."
Or, at least, she amended silently to herself, that was what the history someday would say. That the death of the Empire occurred at Endor, with all the rest of it merely a mopping up action. A mopping up action which had lasted 5 years so far, and could wind up lasting another 20 the way things were going. She let her eyes drift across the brilliant mottled green world turning slowly beneath them, wondering yet again why she'd chosen this place for her rendezvous with Kabarak. True, it was a system that practically every being in both the Republic and Imperial sections of the galaxy had heard of and knew how to find. And with the major planes of contention long gone from this sector, it was a quiet enough place for two ships to meet. But there were memories here, too, some of which Leia would just as soon not bring to mind. Before they'd triumphed, they'd very nearly lost everything. From down the tunnel, Chewbacca roared a question.
"Hang on, I'll check,"
Leia called back. Leaning over the board, she keyed a switch.
"It reads, standby modulo," she reported. "Wait a minute. Now it reads, system ready. Do you want me to..."
And abruptly, without any warning, a black curtain seemed to drop across her vision. Slowly, she became aware that there was a metallic voice calling to her.
"Your Highness," it said, over and over again. "Your Highness, can you hear me? Please, Your Highness, can you hear me?"
She opened her eyes, vaguely surprised to discover they were closed, to find Chewbacca leaning over her with an open medpack gripped in one huge hand, an agitated 3PO hovering like a nervous mother bird behind him.
"I'm all right," she managed. "What happened?" "You shouted for help,"
3PO put in before Chewbacca could answer.
"At least we thought it was for help," he amended helpfully. "You were brief and rather incoherent."
"I don't doubt it," Leia told him. It was starting to come back now, like moonlight through the edge of a cloud. The menace, the rage, the hatred, the despair.
"You didn't feel it, did you?"
she asked Chewbacca. He growled a negative, watching her closely.
"I felt nothing either," 3PO put in.
Leia shook her head.
"I don't know what it could have been. One minute I was sitting there, and then the next..."
She broke off, a sudden horrible thought striking her.
"Chewie, where does this orbit take us? Does it ever pass through the position where the Death Star blew up?"
Chewbacca stared at her a moment, rumbling something deep in his throat. Then, shifting the medpack to his other hand, he reached past her to key the computer. The answer came almost immediately.
5 minutes ago," Leia murmured, feeling cold. "That would be just about right, wouldn't it?"
Chewbacca growled an affirmative, then a question.
"I really don't know," she had to admit. It sounds a little like something Luke went through on... during his Jedi training, she amended, remembering just in time that Luke still wanted Dagobah's significance to be kept a secret. But he saw a vision. All I felt was, I don't know. It was anger and bitterness, but at the same time there was something almost sad about it. No, sad isn't the right word. She shook her head, sudden tears welling inexplicably up in her eyes. I don't know. Look, I'm all right. You two can go on back to what you were doing. Chewbacca rumbled under his breath again, clearly not convinced. But he said nothing else as he closed the medpack and pushed past 3PO. The cockpit door slid open for him. With the proverbial Wookiee disdain for subtlety, he locked it in that position before disappearing down the tunnel into the main body of the ship. Leia focused on 3PO.
You too, she told him. Go on, you still have work to do back there. I'm all right, really.
Well, very well, Your Highness, the droid said, clearly no happier than Chewbacca was.
If you're certain.
I am. Go on, scat. 3PO dithered another moment, then obediently shuffled out of the cockpit. And the silence resumed. A silence that was thicker somehow than it had been before, and much darker. Leia set her teeth firmly together.
I will not be intimidated, she said aloud to the silence. Not here, not anywhere.
The silence didn't reply. After a minute, Leia reached over to the board and keyed in a course alteration that would keep them from again passing through the spot where the Emperor had died. Refusing to be intimidated, after all, didn't mean deliberately asking for trouble. And after that, there was nothing left to do but wait and wonder if Kabarak would indeed come. The topmost bit of the walled city Ilik poked through the clutching trees of the jungle pressing tightly around it, looking to Han for all the world like some sort of dome-topped, silver-skinned droid drowning in a sea of green quicksand.
Any idea how we land on that thing? He asked.
Probably through those vents near the top, Lando said, pointing at the Lady Luck's main display. They read large enough for anything up to about W-class space barge to get into. Han nodded, fingers plucking restlessly at the soft armrest of his co-pilot seat. There weren't a lot of things in the galaxy that could make him nervous, but having to sit there while someone else made a tricky landing was one of them.
This is even a crazier place to live than that nomad city thing of yours, he growled.
No argument from me, Lando agreed, adjusting their altitude a bit. Several seconds later than Han would have done it.
At least on Enkeon we don't have to worry about getting eaten by some exotic plant.
But that's economics for you. At last count, there were 8 cities in this part of New Cove, and 2 more being built.
Han grimaced. And all because of those same exotic plants. Or, to be specific, the exotic biomolecules that could be harvested from them.
The Covies seemed to think the profit was worth having to live in armored cities all the time. No one knew what the plants thought about it.
They're still crazy, he said. Watch out, they may have magnetic airlocks on those entrance ducts.
Lando gave him a patient look. Will you relax? I have flown ships before, you know.
Yeah, Han muttered.
Setting his teeth together, he settled in to suffer through the landing. It wasn't as bad as he'd expected. Lando got his clearance from control and guided the Lady Luck with reasonable skill into the flaring maw of one of the entrance ducts, following the curved pipe down and inward to a brightly lit landing area just beneath the transparasteel dome that topped the city walls. Inbound customs were a mere formality, though given the planet's dependence on exports, the outbound scrutiny would probably be a lot tighter. They were officially welcomed to Ilik by a professional greeter with a professional smile, given a data card with maps of the city and surrounding territory, and then turned loose. "That wasn't so hard," Lando commented, as they rode a sliding spiral ramp down through the spacious open center. At each level, walkways led outward from the ramp to the market, administrative, and living areas of the city. "Where are we supposed to be meeting Luke?" "Three more levels down, in one of the entertainment districts," Han told him. "The Imperial Library didn't have much detail on this place, but it did mention a little tap cafe called the Mishra, attached to some half-size version they've got of the old Grandis Mon Theater on Coruscant. I got the impression it was kind of a watering hole for local big shots."
"Sounds like a good place to meet," Lando agreed. He threw Han a sideways look. "So, you ready to show me the hook yet?"
Han frowned.
"Hook? Come on, you old pirate," Lando snorted. "You pick me up at Sluis Van, ask for a lift out to New Cove, send Luke on ahead for this cloak and blade rendezvous, and you expect me to believe you're just going to wave goodbye now and let me go back to Inkeon?"
And gave his friend his best wounded look.
"Come on, Lando."
"The hook, Han. Let me see the hook." Han sighed theatrically.
"There isn't any hook, Lando," he said. "You can leave for Nkion any time you want to.
Course," he added casually, "if you hung around a little and gave us a hand, you might be able to work a deal here to unload any spare metals you had lying around. Like, a stockpile of frifridium or something."
Carefully keeping his eyes forward, he could still feel the heat of Lando's glare.
"Luke told you about that, didn't he?" Lando demanded.
Han shrugged.
"He might have mentioned it," he conceded.
Lando hissed between clenched teeth.
"I'm going to strangle him," he announced. "Jedi or not, I'm going to strangle him."
"Oh, come on, Lando," Han soothed. "You hang around a couple of days, you listen to people's jabberings, you maybe dig us out a lead or two about what Phalia's got going here, and that's it. You go home and back to your mining operation, and we never bother you again."
"I've heard that before," Lando countered. But Han could hear the resignation in his voice. "What makes you think Phalia's got contacts on New Cove?"
"Because, during the war, this was the only place his Botans ever seemed to care about defending." He broke off, grabbing Lando's arm and turning both of them hard to the right toward the central column of the spiral walkway.
"What?"
Lando managed.
"Quiet," Han hissed, trying to simultaneously hide his face and still watch the figure he'd spotted leaving the ramp one level down.
"That Bothan down there to the left. See him?" Lando turned slightly, peering in the indicated direction out of the corner of his eye.
"What about him?"
"It's Tav Brelia, one of Phalia's top aides."
"You're kidding," Lando said, frowning down at the alien. "How can you tell?"
"That neck piece he wears. Some kind of family crest or something. I've seen it dozens of times at council meetings."
Han chewed at his lip, trying to think. If that really was Brelia over there, finding out what he was up to could save them a lot of time. But Luke was probably sitting in the Tap Cafe downstairs right now waiting for them.
"I'm going to follow him," he told Lando, shoving his data pad and the city map into the other's hands.
"You head down to the Mishra, grab Luke, and catch up with me."
"But
if you're not with me in an hour, I'll try calling on the comlink," and cut him off, stepping toward the outside of the ramp. They were nearly to the Bothans' level now.
"Don't call me. I might be someplace I wouldn't want a call beep going off."
He stepped off the ramp onto the walkway.
"Good luck," Lando called softly after him.
There was a good scattering of aliens among the humans wandering around Illic, but Brelia's cream-colored fur stood out of the crowd enough to make him easy to follow, which was just as well. If Han could recognize the Bothan could probably recognize him right back, and it would be risky to have to get too close. Luckily, the alien didn't seem to even consider the possibility that anyone might be following him. He kept up a steady pace, never turning around, as he headed past cross streets and shops and atria toward the outer city wall. Han stayed with him, wishing he hadn't been so quick to give the city map to Lando. It might have been nice to have some idea where he was going. They passed through one final atrium and reached a section of warehouse-type structures abutting a vast mural that seemed to have been painted directly on the inner city wall. Brelia went straight to one of the buildings near the mural and disappeared through the front door. Han ducked into a convenient doorway about 30 meters down the street from the warehouse. The door Brelia had gone through, he could see, carried the faded sign Amethyst Shipping and Storage above it.
"I just hope it's on the map," he muttered under his breath, pulling his comlink from his belt.
"It is," a woman's voice came softly from behind him. Han froze.
"Hello?" he asked tentatively.
"Hello," she said back. "Turn around, please. Slowly, of course."
Han did as ordered, the comlink still in hand.
"If this is a robbery..."
"Don't be silly."
The woman was short and slender, perhaps 10 years older than him, with close-cut graying hair and a thin face, which under other circumstances would look friendly enough. The blaster pointed his direction was some unfamiliar knockoff of a Blastech DL-18, not nearly as powerful as his own DL-44, but under the circumstances the difference didn't matter a whole lot.
"Put the comlink on the ground," she continued. "Your blaster, too, as long as you're down there."
Silently, Han crouched down, drawing his weapon out with exaggerated caution. Under cover of the motion, with most of her attention hopefully on the blaster, he flicked on the comlink. Laying both on the ground, he straightened and took a step back, just to prove that he knew the proper procedure for prisoners.
"Now what?"
"You seem interested in the little get-together yonder," she said, stooping to retrieve the blaster and comlink. "Perhaps you'd like a guided tour."
"That would be great," Han told her, raising his hands and hoping that she wouldn't think to look at the comlink before putting it away in one of the pockets in her jumpsuit. She didn't look at it. She did, however, shut it off.
"I think I'm insulted," she said mildly. "That has to be the oldest trick on the list."
Han shrugged, determined to maintain at least a little dignity here.
"I didn't have time to come up with any new ones." "Apology accepted. Come on, let's go. And lower your hands. We don't want any passers-by wondering now, do we?"
Of course not, Han said, dropping his hands to his sides. They were halfway to the amethyst when off in the distance a siren began wailing. It was, Luke thought as he looked around the Mishra, almost like an inverted replaying of his first visit to the Mos Eisley Cantina on Tatooine all those years ago. True, the Mishra was light years more sophisticated than that dilapidated place had been, with a correspondingly more upscale clientele. But the bar and tables were crowded with the same wide assortment of humans and aliens. The smells and sounds were equally variegated, and the band off in the corner was playing similar music, a style, obviously, that had been carefully tailored to appeal to a multitude of different races. There was one other difference, too. Crowded though the place might be, the patrons were leaving Luke a respectful amount of room at the bar. He took a sip of his drink, a local variant of the hot chocolate Lando had introduced him to, this one with a touch of mint, and glanced over at the entrance. Han and Lando should have been only a couple of hours behind him, which meant they could be walking in at any minute. He hoped so, anyway. He'd understood Han's reasons for wanting the ships to come into Elix separately. But with all the threats that seemed to be hanging over the New Republic, they couldn't really afford to waste time. He took another sip, and from behind him came an inhuman bellow. He spun around, hand automatically yanking his lightsaber from his belt, as the sound of a chair crashing over backwards added an exclamation point to the bellow. 5 meters away from him, in the middle of a circle of frozen patrons, a Barabel and a Rodian stood facing each other over a table, both with blasters drawn. "No blasters! No blasters!" an SE-4 servant droid called, waving his arms for emphasis as he scuttled toward the confrontation. In the flick of an eye, the Barabel shifted aim and blew the droid apart, bringing his blaster back to bear on the Rodian before the other could react. "Hey," the bartender said indignantly, "that's going to cost you..." "Shut up," the Barabel cut him off with a snarl. "Rodian will pay you after he pay me." The Rodian drew himself up to his full height, which still left him a good half meter shorter than his opponent, and spat something in a language Luke didn't understand. "You lie," the Barabel spat back. "You cheat, I know." The Rodian said something else. "You no like?" the Barabel countered, his voice haughty. "You do anyway. I call on Jedi for judgment." Every eye in the Tap Cafe had been riveted to the confrontation. Now, in almost perfect unison, the gazes turned to Luke. "What?" he asked cautiously. "He wants you to settle the dispute," the bartender said, relief evident in his voice. A relief that Luke himself was far from feeling. "Me?" The bartender gave him a strange look. "You're the Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker, aren't you?" he asked, gesturing at the lightsaber in Luke's hand. "Yes," Luke admitted. "Well then," the bartender concluded, waving a hand toward the disputants. Except that, Jedi or no Jedi, Luke didn't have a drop of legal authority here. He opened his mouth to tell the bartender that, and then took another look into the other's eyes. Slowly, he turned back around, the excuses sticking unsaid in his throat. It wasn't just the bartender he saw. Everyone in the Tap Cafe, it seemed, was looking at him with pretty much the same expression. An expression of expectation and trust. Trust in the judgment of a Jedi. Taking a quiet breath, sternly ordering his pounding heart to calm down, he started through the crowd toward the confrontation. Ben Kenobi had introduced him to the Force. Yoda had taught him how to use the Force for self-control and self-defense. Neither had ever taught him anything about mediating arguments. "All right," he said as he reached the table. "The first thing you're going to do, both of you, is put away your weapons."
"Who first?" the Barabel demanded.
"Rodians collect bounty. He shoot if I disarm." This was certainly getting off to a great start. Suppressing a sigh, Luke ignited his lightsaber, holding it out so that the brilliant green blade was directly between the opposing blasters. "No one is going to shoot anyone," he said flatly. "Put them away." Silently, the Barabel complied. The Rodian hesitated a second longer, then followed suit. "Now tell me the problem," Luke said, shutting down the lightsaber, but keeping it ready in his hand.
"He hire me for tracking job," the Barabel said, jabbing a keratin-plated finger at the Rodian. "I do what he say, but he no pay me."
The Rodian said something indignant-sounding. "Just a minute, we'll get to you," Luke told him. Wondering how he was going to handle that part of the cross-examination. "What sort of job was it?"
"He asked me hunt animal nest for him," the Barabel said. "Animals bothering little ships, eating at sides. I do what he say. He burn animal nest, get money. But then he pay me in no good money."
He gestured down at a now scattered pile of gold-colored metal chips. Luke picked one up. It was small and triangular, with an intricate pattern of lines in the center, and inscribed with a small 100 in each corner. "Anyone ever see this currency before?" he called, holding it up. "It's new imperial scrip," someone dressed in an expensive business coat said, with thinly veiled contempt. "You can only spend it on imperial-held worlds and stations." Luke grimaced. Another reminder, if he'd needed one, that the war for control of the galaxy was far from over.
"Did you tell him beforehand that you'd be paying in this?" he asked the Rodian.
The other said something in his own language. Luke glanced around the circle, wondering if asking for a translator would diminish his perceived status here.
"He says that that was how he was paid," a familiar voice said.
And Luke turned to see Lando ease his way to the front of the crowd. "Says he argued about it, but that he didn't have any choice in the matter."
"That is how the Empire's been doing business lately," someone in the crowd offered. "At least around here."
The Barabel spun toward the other. "I no want your judgment," he snarled. "Only Jedi give judgment."
"All right, calm down," Luke told him, fingering the chit and wondering what he was going to do.
If this really was the way the Rodian had been paid, "Is there any way to convert these into something else?" he asked the Rodian. The other answered,
"He says no," Lando translated. "You can use them for goods and services on Imperial worlds, but since no one in the New Republic will take them, there's no official rate of exchange."
"Right," Luke said dryly. He might not have Lando's experience in under-the-plate operations, but he hadn't been born yesterday either. "So what's the unofficial exchange rate?"
"No idea, actually," Lando said, looking around the crowd.
"Must be someone here who works both sides of the street, though."
He raised his voice. "Anyone here do business with the Empire?" If they did, they were keeping quiet about it.
"Shy, aren't they?" Luke murmured.
"About admitting Imperial dealings to a Jedi," Lando countered. "I'd be shy, too."
Luke nodded, feeling a sinking sense in the pit of his stomach as he studied the Rhodian's tapir-like snout and passive, multifaceted eyes. He'd hoped that he could simply smooth out the problem and thereby avoid the need to pass any kind of real judgment. Now, he had no choice but to rule on whether the Rhodian was, in fact, deliberately trying to cheat his partner. Closing his eyes down to slits, he composed his mind and stretched out his senses. It was a long shot, he knew, but most species showed subtle physiological changes when under stress. If the Rhodian was lying about the payment, and if he thought that Luke's Jedi skills could catch him at it, he might react enough to incriminate himself. But even as Luke ran through the sensory enhancement techniques, something else caught his attention. It was an odor, a faint whiff of Carababa tobacco and armudu, the same combination Lando had called his attention to on the Sluice Van space station. Luke opened his eyes and looked around the crowd. "Niles Ferrier," he called. "Will you step forward, please?" There was a long pause, punctuated only by Lando's sudden hissing intake of air at Ferrier's name. Then, with a rustle of movement from one side of the circle, a familiar, bulky figure pushed his way to the front. "What do you want?" he demanded, his hand resting on the butt of his holstered blaster. "I need to know the unofficial exchange rate between Imperial and New Republic currencies," Luke said. "I thought perhaps you could tell me what it is." Ferrier studied him with ill-concealed scorn. "This is your problem, Jedi. Leave me out of it." There was a low rumble of displeasure from the crowd. Luke didn't reply, but held Ferrier in a level gaze. And after a moment, the other's lip twisted. "The last time I did business on the other side, we settled on a 5-4 Empire-Republic conversion," he growled. "Thank you," Luke said. "That seems straightforward enough, then," he continued, turning to the Rhodian. "Pay your associate with New Republic currency at a 5-4 exchange rate, and take the Empire script back for the next time you work in their territory." The Rhodian spat something. "That is lie," the Barabel snarled back. "He says he doesn't have enough in New Republic currency," Lando translated. "Knowing Rhodians, I'd tend to agree with the Barabel." "Perhaps." Luke stared hard into the Rhodian's faceted eyes. "Perhaps not. But there might be another way." He looked back at Ferrier, raised his eyebrows questioningly. The other was sharp, all right. "Don't even think it, Jedi," he warned. "Why not?" Luke asked. "You work both sides of the border. You're more likely to be able to spend Imperial scrip than the Barabel could." "Suppose I don't want to," Ferrier countered. "Suppose I don't plan to go back any time soon. Or maybe I don't want to get caught with that much Imperial scrip on me. Fix it yourself, Jedi. I don't owe you any favors." The Barabel whirled on him. "You talk respect," he snarled. "He is Jedi. You talk respect." A low rumble of agreement rippled through the crowd. "Better listen to him," Lando advised. "I don't think you'd want to get in a fight here, especially not with a Barabel. They've always had a soft spot for Jedi." "Yeah, right behind their snouts," Ferrier retorted. But his eyes were flicking around the crowd now, and Luke caught the subtle shift in his sense as he began to realize just how much in the minority his opinion of Luke was. Or perhaps he was realizing that winding up in the middle of an official flap might buy him more attention than he really wanted to have. Luke waited, watching the other's sense flicker with uncertainty
waiting for him to change his mind. When it happened quickly.
All right, but it'll have to be a 5-3 exchange, Ferrier insisted. The 5-4 was a fluke. No telling if I'll ever get that again.
It is cheat, the Barabel declared. I deserve more from Rodion.
Yes, you do, Luke agreed. But under the circumstances, this is probably the best you're going to get.
He looked at the Rodian.
If it helps any, he added to the Barabel, remember that you can pass a warning to the rest of your people about dealing with this particular Rodian. Not being able to hire expert Barabel hunters will hurt him far more in the long run than he might cost you now.
The Barabel made a grating noise that was probably the equivalent of a laugh.
Did I speak truth? He said. Punishment is good.
Luke braced himself. This part the Barabel wasn't going to be nearly so happy about.
You will, however, have to pay for the repair of the droid you shot. Whatever the Rodian said or did, he is not responsible for that.
The Barabel stared at Luke, his needle teeth making small, tight, biting motions. Luke returned the cold gaze, senses alert to the Force for any intimation of attack.
Jedi again speak truth, the alien said at last.
Reluctantly, but firmly, I accept judgment. Luke let out a quiet sigh of relief.
Then the matter is closed, he said.
He looked at Ferrier, then raised his lightsaber to his forehead in salute to the two aliens, and turned away.
Nicely done, Lando murmured in his ear as the crowd began to break up.
Thanks, Luke murmured, his mouth dry. It had worked all right, but it had been more luck than skill, and he knew it. If Ferrier hadn't been there, or if the ship thief hadn't decided to back down, Luke had no idea how he would have solved the dispute. Leia and her diplomatic training would have done better than he had. Even Han and his long experience at hard bargaining would have done as well. It was an aspect of Jedi responsibility that he'd never considered before. But it was one he'd better start thinking about, and fast.
Han's following one of Felia's Bothan pals up on level 4, Lando was saying as they moved through the crowd toward the exit. Spotted him from the west central ramp and sent me to...
He stopped short. From outside the Mishra, the sound of wailing sirens had started.
I wonder what that is, he said, a touch of uneasiness in his voice.
It's an alarm, one of the Tap Cafe patrons said, his forehead wrinkled in concentration as he listened. The pitch of the siren changed. Changed again.
It's a raid.
A raid? Luke frowned. He hadn't heard of any pirate activity in this sector. Who's raiding you?
Who else? The man retorted. The Empire.
Luke looked at Lando.
Oh, he said quietly.
Yeah, Lando agreed. Come on.
This book is continued on cassette number 4, side 1.